21, first verse. We'll have a reading of three verses, Sister Gail.
After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and on this wise showed he himself. There were together Simon Peter and Thomas called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples. Simon Peter saith unto them, I go a fishing. They say unto him, We also go with thee. They went forth and entered into a ship immediately, and that night they caught nothing.
Now, where was the previous time that he had showed himself to this group, to a group similar to this?
He had appeared through the locked door and Thomas was present.
And notice that verse 2 will really in practical start there. It says that they were together, Simon Peter and Thomas called Didymus and Nathanael of Cana and the two sons of Zebedee. Now that represents
James and John.
All right. And then the number of what we know of apostles here, number at least
seven.
Possibly seven, if the two other disciples were apostles, that we're not sure of. But the ones it names. And it's strange that Nathanael is mentioned and Thomas is mentioned, but these other two disciples are not. Any other observation with regard to the enumeration of those particular names? Nathanael, you don't hear too much about him, except in the book of, wasn't he the one that prayed when Philip came to him? Yes, but in Israel, behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no guile. Where's that found?
Matthew.
All right, it's in the book of John.
Yeah, it is. It's in the first chapter.
All right. Now, do you notice something about John?
Well, he carries through. He's giving his proof.
All right. Notice. He told about the interview with Nicodemus. He told what Nicodemus did at the cross. He told about Mary Magdalene in detail, but now Nathanael, he brought him up by that name early in his gospel, and now he carries through, as has been said, and mentions him again. In other words, John seems to be quite interested in personalities, even this with regard to Thomas Didymus. And you'll notice that he doesn't mention his own name, but we know he's included John because he was a son of Zebedee. All right, now verse 3, Simon Peter saith unto them, I go a-fishing. And they say unto him, We also go with thee. What does that mean? Seem to suggest to us?
Well, first I wanted to ask, do you have any idea how long the time lapse is between his last appearance? I don't mean necessarily recorded here in John, but the last appearance in this instance. I think a recent article suggested maybe 3 weeks, and that would be one reason why at this point Peter introduced the thought of returning to their former pursuit.
We know that Jesus appeared to the disciples in an interim period of 40 days before he ascended. But in the various accounts that tell us about his appearances to his disciples after his resurrection, a great many of them took place the first day. We don't realize it, but one gospel will mention an incident, another gospel will mention another, but actually many of them occurred very early. And then there's this long space of time, because they had to also leave Jerusalem, go up to Galilee, Because remember when he appeared to the women, he said, tell my brethren or something that I'll go and meet them in Galilee. Well, now we're in Galilee. This is he's in the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Tiberias, it says here. But the same thing, same name. So it could be easily 3 weeks, and perhaps at the very earliest 2 weeks, to allow them time to journey back to their homes. Yes.
For the fact that John does mention these by name, are these all fishermen that he would have been familiar with before the Lord called them, or are these friends of John?
I don't think so. I think he would know all 12, because when Jesus took them up into the mountain, gave them each a surname, gave him his own private name when he was on the mountain. John was there, and they were called one by one to come to him, and after he had prayed to God. So John would certainly be familiar with them all, and some of the others may have been resident in other areas, but these are the ones from the, near Galilee. Remember, we have Nathanael here, right? Now, who was with Nathanael? Philip. And where was Philip from? Cana, or Bethsaida, maybe it was. Bethsaida, which is also at Galilee. But Philip evidently wasn't here at this particular experience. At least he's not mentioned by name. And it'd be strange that John, who mentioned Philip by name in the first chapter, and he mentions Nathanael by name in the first chapter, both together in their experience, and then he comes to this account and he mentions Nathanael, but he does not mention Philip. So we would assume that even though Philip lived there in that region, for some reason he was not in the boat, was not fishing. And this would be, of course, account for Peter's feeling that, well, we must be doing something. So you can see several things about Peter. One thing, he wouldn't be one to sit around. He would be prone to be impatient, which can be very good when it's channeled, because the opposite of being like slothful. Another thing, it shows he's a leader, that they highly respected him. For him to say, I go a fishing, and then they all join, these join him, shows that he did exercise a great deal of influence. Influencing John. John is in here too. They went forth and they entered into a ship immediately. In other words, you can almost see Peter. You know, he's quick and impulsive. And he mentions this, and now he's going to do it. He's not going to wait until tomorrow when he says, I go a fishing. He goes right now. And they follow him. But now they fish and all night catch nothing. Now that is a psychological damage. Any comments?
Yes. So wouldn't that even be unusual? Because the Sea of Galilee was teeming with fishing.
Yes. Any other comment?
That would have been they call it a ship. Now we think it would have been like that fishing boat we saw in Galilee where they would drop in the nets. That was a pretty good
yes,
size.
Yes, they're fairly good size because some of them, you were in the boat when we went across Galilee, and I think there were about 7 of us. I remember correctly in that boat.
In the little boat. But fishing ship, as they call it, was that thing that we took pictures of.
Yeah, well, see, I don't remember the one that they took pictures of. Oh, when nearby, on the return trip, followed the core of the fairly near the shore because of the possibility of a storm.
I thought maybe that was a larger one they were.
Like a very small one. Yes. All right. Anybody else up
here? Later account, it shows that when Jesus directed where to throw the net, they caught a lot, which means in the same Sea of Galilee, when they tried to their own, they were not able to. So they, I assume they were, they, God's providence tried to teach them certain lessons.
All right, certainly God's providence seems to have entered here, because to catch nothing is rather strange. And it's as though they're prepared for a certain lesson. Now, supposing you were there among them, some of them might have been a little conscience-stricken, that by not catching something, they might have associated with the fact that he said, you go there and I'll appear to you, and here they're out fishing. They're not like in an attitude to receive him. It would seem to represent a lack of faith, but actually I don't view it quite that harshly, this particular thing, because to do something would be now. But when morning was now come, we didn't read that, 4 through 6. Next.
But when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. Then Jesus saith unto them, children, have ye any meat? They answered him, no. And he said unto them, cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. They cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes.
All right. Now, Jesus stood on the shore. Now, John mentioned this. It must have been very significant, that posture. They're in the boat, they're going to shore, and they see this individual on the shore. It must have been a little bit striking for John to just say it that way. He stood on the shore. Now, the distance from where they were and the shore was about the length of a football field. Not quite. That's 120 yards, I think. So this is about 100 yards. And which is 300 feet, which is 200 cubits, which it mentions. This shows too that Jesus had a very powerful voice. To talk to somebody that distance, and for an individual to stand on shore and be discerned as standing there at that distance, there must have been just psychologically something very striking. They caught nothing, now it's morning, and they're weaving their way to back, and here's an individual on shore standing, which they observe, and then he calls to them, children, have ye any meat? See, and then they, no, we haven't caught anything. And then he tells them to, so his voice would have to carry at that great distance. Now, we read only through 6, right? So they cast it on the right side of the boat. Is there something significant in that? We usually say the right side is the favorable side, is the proper side, and so forth. So I think even in that, that he's teaching them that they have to do things in his way in order to do it in the proper manner. And now they go to pull that net out of the water. And then they find a great deal of resistance because that net is just chock full of fishes. We have eaten there some of the fish that was caught in the Sea of Galilee, and they're not exactly too small. I mean, they're, you know, pretty big fish. Of course, when they serve it to you, but tells us later the number, so we know this was a real good haul. And again we see something. Let's read that. 7 through 10.
That's a sign, because I could just add, wouldn't that casting on the right side be like a person would hear, let him hear? In other words, don't waste, it's like not giving your pearls to swine, not constantly talking about it, but talk to the people who have a hunger and an ear for the truth. Is that the thought?
Well, it would be to spend your energies in the most profitable direction that you could deem possible, and especially that would seem to be in harmony with the Lord's word. There, back there, they did it in harmony with what he instructed them to do. Let us read 7 through 10.
Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved said unto Peter, It is the Lord. Now, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girt his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. And the other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from land, but as it were 200 cubits, dragging the net with fishes. As soon as then, as they were coming to the land, they saw a fire of coals there, and a fish laid thereon, and bread. Jesus said unto them, Bring up the fish which you have now caught.
All right. When they made this haul, John said that this is the Lord. It is the Lord. Why did he say that?
I feel that he recognized them because of what he had done once before, that he had done this before. It's like when he first met them in the beginning, that they went through the same experience, this kind of thing.
All right.
Well, Peter wasn't there, just John and James at that first time.
Well, that may be true, but they usually go with two boats. So just like in this account, there are two boats here, but the other one it doesn't pay much attention to until, in connection with the assistance of pulling that net to shore, they required the assistance of the other boat, and it's quite possible. John, of course, was very observing, and he certainly was one of them. There's no question about that in the original account. When he called them to be his disciples, he called them to be his disciples, come follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Address them in that fashion. And they did. But now, the next fishing is when he's gone. That becomes now very important, how they conduct their efforts subsequent to his resurrection. We see a little insight into Peter again. He stands out as a very, very striking personality of the apostles. And the fact that he was naked there, well, it doesn't say maybe how naked, but certainly he was not much clad. But you could see he didn't want to be encumbered with any constriction of clothing. He was ready for work. He was ready for activity, and didn't want anything to restrain him. So we can see some of the remarks he made, and even later, subsequently, somewhere in this chapter, another thing he says, Jesus says about him. Yes?
Several questions. One was back on verse 5. The word children. Was that a common form of address back there, or would that have been unusual too for a stranger to address
them? The only thing is, normally for one to say children, it would be a superior person, not necessarily mean their father, he's their father or anything like that, but anyone who would be recognized as being superior would talk even this way, even in those days.
But appeared as an older man, but very stately and erect.
Well, it doesn't say here. John was extremely observant of Jesus' last days and this resurrection, because John uses that expression, little children, in his epistles frequently. And but he was older, see, in that case. The only thing we can see is that these people were very strong characters, and yet there's something childlike about them, which is good. Like the one who climbed up, Zacchaeus, who climbed up in the tree, very, very wealthy man, because of his little stature. So this humility and naiveness is the way he tells them, after, if you fished all night and you didn't catch anything, and somebody said, throw your net on the right side of the boat, you'd say, we've done that. We've had it, you know. For therefore, he must have had a very unusual appearance. So when it said Jesus stood on the shore, I see that as very significant, that posture. For them to notice at that distance that they were from him, that there was something about him that was quite different. It doesn't tell us what he looked like, but of course, they all knew who it was once they started to pull that net. John sounded the keynote. It is the Lord. And they didn't need to have him have other verification. So what his appearance was, we're not certain, but certainly it was in some type of authoritative posture or appearance, something along that line. And then his statement, children, would be in conformity with this superior stance.
Also, they were not too far from shore in their boat, and to have morning, if you can imagine the light coming, and there's someone standing ashore, there's no boat, obviously there's no way he got there, and they may have been already wondering, you know, about it, and then when he said cast it, that clinched it, that is the Lord. But to have him standing there in the morning light would have been unusual, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Another question. Earlier it mentions they went forth in a ship. But here in verse 8 it calls it a little ship. Now is it the same ship, or would they have had a bigger boat with a little one on board who would have gotten out and gone to ship?
There were two boats, as I was trying to say earlier.
One is to hold one to the net.
And the other one would, because you'd have to haul it. You'd have to haul it in. But the one would be the main boat. The other subsidiary boat. Especially with net casting. The boat dragging of the net, of course, is done by the boat now. They're dragging it with the boat and with assistance. Now they come to land, but the boats are still out there a little way. The nets are out there also a little distance, not too far, but they wade to shore. This also tells us something about the terrain of the Galilee, because there are parts there that are very deep, right up to shore, and other parts that are not. So there you have water gradation. Yes?
When he asked, I can't get the thought in my mind of the ship and the little boats. Don't they have to make a move if he says to go on the other side? Don't they have to move? Does this take a little time for them to get back on the other side when they throw the ships, the net there.
Sure. Yeah, they don't like, it's not like what you do a fly casting, when you have a whip like that. No, casting the net would take a little time, yes. But that's why it makes it so, they're so humbly, they're so humble in that they do it.
Yeah, it would have taken quite a
yeah,
while.
Yeah, it would take. I mean, for them to do it, I mean, and you've been working all night, you're not in the mood for that one more. So he had a superior posture, something about him. They call it charisma, but there's also other types of words that we use I can't think of right now. Now they can, yes.
Simon took John's word that it is the Lord. He didn't apparently know for sure himself.
Well, he told him. But as has been suggested, there is a faint possibility that they're getting a little bit nervous. The fact they didn't catch the fish, there may be a little conscience involved there, possibly. So things are strange. Then they see this party on the shore. I just think the whole thing is a strange. They're certainly teetering to recognition. They're getting very close to it. But John, of course, is always seems to be very sharp in a number of things, in observing things more quickly than the others. Another thing, Peter and John were companions later in connection with the gospel message. On Pentecost, it was Peter and John that spoke. And in healing, there was another case where Peter and John were together. And also when they went to go on a trip up north, it was the apostles sent these two, Peter and John, again. So these two are looked on as like leading lights of the apostles, these two, Peter and John. But John never mentions his name. He's that other disciple. He's the one that the Lord loved. He's this, that other disciple, but which is him. But nevertheless, he had a strong personality in spite of his soft words. After all, he was a son of thunder. And I don't think that was erased right away. That was channeled into being very courageous for the truth later on and expounding it. All right, now they come, and they come to land. You can see them now getting out in the farm, and then they observe a fire already burning, coals laid, and then they see fish and bread there on the coals. What does that tell us?
We read nothing about this one on the shore fishing, so that fish was produced like the feeding of the 5,000, I think, somehow.
All right, fish and bread again. The multiplication of the fish and the bread. And without their help, he didn't need them. The Lord does not need us in that way. So that's a lesson also that has to be learned, that not to think of oneself too unseemly with regard to their ministry. All right, the fish and the bread are there already laid for them. And but then he says, bring up the fish which ye have now caught. Now, why does he say this now? I think all this is the spiritual lesson, in the sense that the Lord can perform his work, whatever is necessary, without the disciples, without the apostles. Yet, while he impresses upon them and upon us our own lack of importance. Yet on the other hand, he then reverts back the other way, but he will accept the services of his people. He's not that independent, but he has to show us what our proper place is. But then, on the other hand, it's like an invitation that he would accept of their fish and bread, and they would sit down and have a meal together.
But do you think they took them?
Everything is there. But the very fact he says, bring of the fish that you are caught, it's like saying that while after they comprehend, they see that he has fish and bread there that he can produce without their efforts, their strenuous efforts produced. And yet, he, on the other hand, condescends. He condescends to accept the sacrifices of his people. And even those sacrifices were made, were blessed in the fact that they caught the fish to start with, after he had instructed them what to do. Let's read a little more on this. 11 through 14.
Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land full of great fishes, 153. And for all there were so many, yet was not the net broken. Jesus saith unto them, Come and dine. And none of the disciples durst ask him, Who art thou? Knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus then cometh and taketh bread and giveth them, and fish likewise. This is now the third time that Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was risen from the dead.
So we go back, and he instructs them, bring of the fish which ye have now caught. And of course, Simon Peter is like the first one again. Simon Peter is very impulsive, and you get the impression that he did this as a lone almost. He was quick, and he did it. It also gives some support to the early pictures that depict Peter as a very strong man, very strong, muscular, and so forth. And this seems to be the case. This is a clue here, just like with regard to Moses, when you have pictures of Moses and statues, so very strong. And there are evidences in the actions of Moses that he was exactly that. And now it doesn't say that Jesus ate of their fish. They didn't have any bread, for one thing. That it doesn't say it here. But the very fact he says, bring of the fish, suggests that he accepts their and wants them to realize that the importance of their work and efforts. Now, the net didn't break. That's interesting, too. That was miraculous. John observed that, because he's writing about that. Did you read about that in the other Gospels?
Yeah, it was broken in Luke.
That's a different incident.
That's a different incident. That's right. John is the one who notes this. This is not recorded in the other Gospels. So John narrates things that he deems significant that are omitted by the other three writings. And that's why Nicodemus, Joseph of Arimathea, the woman of Samaria, Mary Magdalene, he zeroes in on certain very important pictures of interest to and help to Christians in this age, and have added to the fullness of the gospel. So he's very observant of little things, far more keenly than the others.
And when Jesus called the disciples to become a fisher of men, and something in he shows the lesson analogy of catching a fish as if catching a people, And in the first account, in the when fish was caught, net was broken, and after resurrection, in this case, it was full, and yet John indicated, he says, net was not broken. I was wondering, there is some significance in there. One case, earlier case was broken, in this case, the net was not broken. Is it?
There probably is a significance, yes. The very fact that this is what did happen, and this is a miraculous experience here, yes.
I was wondering, too, along that line, we've been throwing out the net and not catching anything. Will there be a time when we throw out the net and get a full load?
It would depend what kind of fish and what the net. We know now in this harvest age that we're getting near the end, so we could not expect the type of harvest of the special wheat that the Lord is looking for, but who knows that there'd be a harvesting of something preparatory to the next stage. Brother Russell has always suggested that we're in between two ages, and that there are certain things that are helpful to others that we may not know about. We think of like Israel and things like this, that there may be something that will be become more and more significant as time goes on. And also in just enlightening. But the fact that this was in the beginning of the ministry, the net broke, this was before, of course, Pentecost. So was this here, as far as that goes, because this is after his resurrection, but not quite. But it's nearing, getting very near to that date. And I would say the probable lesson of the question was asked. Unless somebody has another, I have an answer of my own. Has anybody else one? Have you an answer to that question?
Well, I have been thinking on this too. The fact they're called great fishes and not just fishes, it seems to almost imply they would require a little flock rather than just concentrated and perhaps not naked. I wondered if it was the thought that at the end of the age there would be perhaps 153 of the final fleet members who come out of Babylon, as opposed to those who had this sensation of food quite along.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be able to deny that because I don't know what the 153 is. So, except that the 153 is a strange number.
And I didn't mean 153.
Yes, go on.
I didn't mean just 153 would come out, but I meant of those who came out, I wondered if 153 would comprise, would be included in the final fleet members. I don't know.
You made it clear in the first place, but whether I said that I would not know myself because I'm not sure of that interpretation. Now, what was I had a thought.
About
the
153?
Pardon me?
Were you going to say something about the number
100? I was going to on that too, but I was going to say something before that.
Was it with Chai's question about
it was
the two, one time the net was broken at one time it wasn't?
Yeah. No, I forgot about that, but I had something. So maybe I'll come back to that. See, because when you're question and answer, my thought, I cannot, I'm a one-track person.
Uh-huh.
Once that's interrupted,
yeah.
I have difficulty, especially as you get older. You're not as fast, as resilient as you are when you're young.
Well,
but,
I thought if the net was not broken, it kind of infers that there's still more fishing to be done. See, that's another thought now. The net, is they have more use for it. They could use it again. All different
yes.
ideas.
Brother Frank, is it 153 that we're still dealing with, or the fact that the Lord asked them to bring of that net? Is there less than 153 in that net?
No, there were 153 in the net because it tells that when he drew it to shore, that's what Peter, when he says bring of the fish, it means bring the fish. The word of is
that
genitive case. In some languages you state it, in other languages you don't. It's implied. But so Peter went and got the net, pulled it in to shore, dragged it up to shore.
Does it,
yes.
does it also suggest the fact that they counted them is kind of an unusual thing, that they counted them out? And they didn't say about 150, but they counted, they knew exactly. And I wondered if that pictures that exactly the number is the 144,000, the 150 might show that it is an exact number that can be counted.
Oh, I have no doubt that the number is significant. That I have no doubt at all.
Uh-huh.
But to give the give the specific interpretation, it can only be a calculated guess at present, as has been suggested by Sister Gail. Yes. Oh, in the thought I had, which comes back to me slowly, is that in the beginning of his ministry, they were untaught disciples, immature, inexperienced in the work that he had in mind for them. This is the beginning of their call. He called them, they're babes. And but now, after 3.5 years of instruction, they were much further advanced in understanding things about Jesus. They lived with him for 3.5 years. So they certainly knew a lot more. They must have learned something in that time, even without the Holy Spirit. I mean, there are certain things you, in beholding him, his manner of life, his talk, and his counsel. He gave them private counsel of which we know nothing. And so at the after his resurrection, he had accomplished in them what he wanted to. Like he said at that prayer in John 17, of those that thou hast given me, I have lost none save one. Another way, but those 11 that he didn't lose, he did instruct them. And they finished their course in that particular type of instruction. And now they were would be ready to go into the ministry, being blessed with the receiving soon of the Holy Spirit, except for one thing, which is now coming up, which we have about Peter. He has a special dealing with Peter, which we come to eventually. And now, notice that when he said, come and dine, of course, they all obediently do that, and they all know that it's Jesus. And but no one wants to say anything. Well, this is so much like this is like human nature. You can see there's a stamp of authenticity to some of the simplest narratives of the Bible. There are certain things that I thought of Ezra and other things. All right, now back to this account. It says this is the third time that Jesus shewed things of this nature to them, the lessons he instructed them, he appeared to them. Now, any comment on that?
Well, we would count more than three times. Does this mean it's the third time he showed himself to a whole group of them, as opposed to maybe the women or Peter alone?
That I would think that's self-evident, that that he means it's the third time where a group of them, of the male, of the apostles, he appeared to a group of women on one occasion at the tomb, the morning of the resurrection. But this is of the apostles. And this is characteristic of John also. You get an insight into it. John mentioned in the beginning of his gospel about the third day and the wedding at Cana. See, there. And you can almost, he tells what happens, that the first day something happened, the second day something happened, then the third day. And here he's saying this is the third time. It's as though he observes things and he keeps them in remembrance. And like a mental library. And this, we believe, is what urged him to write this gospel. he notes several things and he's collecting them in his mind that he felt this would be helpful to know. It is. These details are very interesting. It also, the fact that this is the third group appearance to some of the apostles in a relatively significant number, either 11 or here 5 or 7, whichever is the case, that it helps us to notice the sequential order of his appearances to his people following his ascension. And then when the Apostle Paul comes along later on, and in, I think it was the 1 Corinthians 15 chapter, he adds something that he feels John didn't quite, he mentions a special appearance to James. Among other things, he mentioned some other things too, but I don't want to get into that because that's so. But it just shows there's a development. And they're moved by the Holy Spirit to feel these are significant things to narrate. Now, yes. Oh, yeah, that's another thing.
Probably, well, 15th paragraph. It's been almost 45 minutes.
All right. So we'll stop here at verse 14 then. Yeah.
I
think
it's a meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a lot to be done. And the next is a very touching lesson too, and it might be well to treat that as one study, a separate study, the latter part of this same chapter.